what was going on, I find myself leaping out from where I was sitting and running toward the person that I was seeing in front of me 20 feet away. The feeling I had at the time was one of homecoming, as if a person very dear to me who had been separated from me for an indefinite period of time had, for one miracle or another, appeared out of the blue in the middle of my life. And so, my hand stretched toward her, I was running for an embrace. And when that happened, the feeling was so immense and intense that word cannot describe it. Word cannot tell exactly how it felt to be holding that feminine body, tall, close to 7 feet tall, and completely veiled up with a green veil. All I know is that I had entered into two kind of things. An immeasurable moment of emotional intensity, as well as a time frame that I could not measure numerically. I felt myself at home. I wanted it to be that way. And I had no intention of ending this kind of bliss. Some communicating happened in the course of that moment, which I'm not at liberty to disclose, but upon hearing what she had to tell me, I also heard something to the effect that she had to go. And that I did not want to hear. That became the kind of thing that was not appropriate. So consequently, I began to express my feeling against this kind of thing. I began to want not only to go there with her, but to prevent her from going there so that we can stay in the kind of state that is, for me, acceptable. I need to stay that way. I didn't realize that somehow that announcement was not open for discussion. And so, as I had the feeling that she was going anyway, I began to cling myself onto her stronger. Then I realized that what I was clinging on, the soft body that I was clinging on, was getting rugged. Something about it had been transiting from softness to hardness. So in a deliberate attempt to make a plea, I just opened my eyes as if I wanted to cry out and say, please. It was at that time I noticed I was very vigorously hugging the tree. And at that time also I realized that all the elders, now five of them, were intently closer and very observing of every move that I was making. The supervising elder told me to go join the other people. As I was going, I heard him say that, yes, they always like that. First, they don't want to get into it, and then when they get into it, they don't want to stop it either. But the kind of feeling that I carried with me to the circle of youth was so intense that it broke down a lot of the resistance that I had had prior to this breakthrough. And I call it breakthrough because it left my body with such a reverberation and such an intensity that the slightest thing would make me cry, that the slightest emotional feeling would draw tears out of my eyes. I realized from then onward that I was paying a greater attention to any tree that I would come to, as if something in my psyche was deliberately trying to see the green lady come out again. It was, for me at least, the first sign that what these elders were putting us through had a meaning. And beside its painful nature, the outcome was such that it was worth the path, and it was worth the investment. That night, as any other night, we had the same kind of fire ritual, which put all of us into the dream world, allowing us to go to places, which in my case were places in the universe that I was supposed to have lived in. The words are missing that can encapsulate the content of that kind of journey. But because the elder called it a dream journey, for me it didn't match the intensity of the experience that I had had during the day prior to that time. When the next day came, we were exposed to another kind of ritual. And that kind of ritual was again a continuation, in its content at least, of the kind of breakthrough that occurred in the course of the tree gazing. It was around mid-morning when the elder ordered us to gather together and to stay in line and to listen. They told us that they were going to open up a doorway and that each one of us individually were going to be ordered to get in there. All they told us was that when we feel ourselves descending, that we should make an ultimate effort to hold on to what we see in front of us, because otherwise they would not be able to pull us back into this world. I had no idea what they were talking about. But they were not open to taking any question either. Four elders held a cow skin spread about 2.5 feet above the ground, and one officiating elder who held a staff prayed around that cow hide several times and using the staff hit the middle of the skin. Something like a corrosive effect started to take place, as if acid had been poured onto the skin's surface. And instead of the acid burning off the skin, it became fire. Fire of the type that you see in propane gas burning on a stove. The blue fire for propane gas. And it formed a circle. It burned in a circular way, creating something like a light hole. As one looked into it, there was an immense world below. And when, because the skin was being held by four elders 2.5 feet above the ground, you look under the skin, there's nothing. But you look above, and there's this huge window to a different world. And my mind, which had been trained in the seminary to analyze and try to comprehend what was the scientific or the logical rationale behind such a thing, went to work again. But of course, I was a lot more attentive at that time in trying to do the right thing and not to make a mistake that may result in some drastic results. The kind of world into which that light hole led was so big that it was not possible to see the whole of it just by peeking into it. Plus, the kind of flame that was coming out of it had an extremely high burning potency. I could tell because the elders who hit it open danced around it in some kind of strange way and then hit it one more time, and there were huge pieces of flame like lava just bursting out as if some burning object had fallen on the ground, releasing debris of burning material all over the place. That's when I noticed that one of the problems that I'm facing at that time was I could get burned. I didn't like the feeling, because it was getting hotter and hotter too. The good news for me was that I was, I think, number 41. So I said to myself that, well, I'll observe how the other do it, and I'll try my best to do it, but I'll also try to learn more about it as I watch others do it, and eventually maybe I'll get to ask some of them or to give some of them an interview in order to gain a greater understanding so that I can know how to behave when I get in there. We were about 30 yards away from the flame, or from the light hole, I don't even know how to call it anymore. And the officiating elder ordered the first boy to run. Apparently, we're supposed to run as fast as possible to gain momentum, and upon arriving there, to jump up high and to go down straight, with our leg completely straight and our hands right next to our side. The elder had explained that we have to do it that way because otherwise if we spread our hands, they're going to be cut off as we go down into that place. So nobody wanted to leave his hand behind because nothing is left to hold on to what you see in front of you. So the first kid ran and jumped and disappeared into that light hole. For a time that sounded like 30 seconds, but for us looked like an infinity, everybody was silent. After that, the four elders lifted the skin higher and then tilted it, sending the child popping out of that hole, so that the kid came out crashing on the ground with tongues of flame on his shoulders. So he screamed a little bit, rolled around in order to extinguish that burning thing on his skin, and stood up with his feet trembling a little bit, and was ordered to just go away and rest. And they ordered the second one to come, but not until after the elders had prayed again and hit the middle of the skin, producing therefore the opening of that same kind of window. So the scenario was like this. Every time the doorway was open, it was opened into a different world. And a child was supposed to jump into that world. When the child was expelled, that world would close itself off, meaning that the officiating elder will have to reopen it in order for the next person to jump in. It went on and on like that without any problem until something strange occurred. A child jumped in there, and after the 32nd, the elders lifted the skin and tilted it to the side, and what came out was some kind of huge green jelly kind of looking entity that fell on the ground and spread all over the place. Everybody became very silent. The officiating elder walked to the remain of that object and wondered what it was, just the same way, because his face kind of looked puzzled. But we were terrified, I was terrified, because I knew that that substance that came out had something to do with the child that went into that place. I needed to understand what happened so that I can figure out some ways to avoid it. In the meantime, this substance caught fire and started to burn, emitting the kind of smell that car tires emit when they are burning. The officiating elder walked back to the skin, did his prayers, hit the skin, the window opened again, and he ordered the next child to come. That was bad news for me, because I hoped that everything was going to go fine, and by the time they reached my case, I would be in such a good place that I would go through this whole thing without any problem. But this incident left me with more questions to answer than answers to be had. I wanted eventually to get to talk to one of those people who will get in there, so that somehow I can derive some kind of psychological support when my turn came, so that I don't have to be trailing behind or eventually coming out looking the way this kid looked when he came out. I knew that my friend Nyangoli was 3 or 5 kids ahead of me, and because I didn't know the others, I was hoping to be able to ask him his opinion when he comes out. When his turn came, he jumped in there. As usual, 30 seconds later, he popped out of there, rolled around, stood up, and started to walk away. I called him. He turned around, came back, and I asked, what goes on down there? He looked at me with strange eyes and then walked away. Right after him, the child that jumped in there, when the elders tilted the skin, nothing came out, and the light hole closed itself. So the elders quickly replaced the skin in its position so that the officiating elder can hit it again. He did. The window opened. They shook it, lifted it up, tilted it. Nothing came out. Again, another incident. In one day, I'd seen 2 terminal accidents, and that did not help prepare me to embrace what followed. I don't remember when it is that I heard the voice of the officiating elders order me to run. But all I remember was my feet carrying my body in some kind of strange manner heading towards that light hole. I was so clumsy that something in myself felt like, well, I'm walking towards my death. When I got there, I remember jumping up high and then coming right down. When I entered that place, the first sensation I had was tremendous coldness. I felt myself diving down with such a speed that the closest I could compare it to is like a parachute jumping out of a plane. The descent was so fast that, remembering what the elders had said, to manage to hold on to what I see, I could see what I was supposed to hold on to. But in order to lift my hand to hold on to that was a monumental effort. I don't know how long it lasted. It felt to me as if I had been descending for at least 30 minutes before I was able to grab on to what was in front of me. At that moment, I came to a standstill. There were no aftershock, nothing. It's like a fast descent that end in a sudden stop, but nothing gets shaken in the course of that stop. I looked in front of me for the thing that I was holding on. It was like a light wire with different lights constantly following one another in an upward direction. Almost like the light in a gambling house, constantly running one behind the other. Those lights had different colors: yellow, white, blue, black, and green. I looked down to see what was below me. Far away was a huge source of light that kept opening and closing, as if it was the rhythm of something that is breathing. Every time you open it, it was sent countless lights that jumped onto countless wires heading upward. And then it would close. And the next time, it would be a different color being sent out. And thus was the reason why the color was so diverse. My third attention was to myself. I noticed that I couldn't see myself. I could only feel myself being present there. I knew that it was my hand holding on to that light wire, but I couldn't see my hand. I couldn't see the rest of my body. I could only feel the position of my body. The other thing was, I didn't have to make an effort to hold on to this, as if the type of gravity that was bringing me downward so fast had disappeared. I was not experiencing any kind of effort that was required as part of what I need to do in order to hold on to that light wire. I didn't have the time to think about all of these things, what was actually going on. What happened is that all of a sudden I found myself going upward at the same speed I was going downward. And before I found out, I was coming very close to the ground. I had just enough time to stretch my hand in order to avoid crashing on the ground head first. Then I noticed that my body was experiencing a huge burning sensation on the back. So I rolled just so that I can scratch my back against the ground. It was again this tongue of fire that get caught onto my shoulders and was burning upon contacting the atmosphere. When I stood up, I noticed something that I had not noticed before. Every little crawling thing between the tiniest leaf of grass was perceptible. I could see it. Every tiny little sound that was coming out of the ground or around me, inside me, and outside of me was perceptible, loud and clear. I could hear, see right in front of me, behind me, on the side, without having to turn at all. It was amazing. And so, like everybody else, I walked away silently. And as I passed a tree, I swear I heard some sound come out of there, as if all of a sudden I had acquired a new hearing device. All of a sudden, my senses were increased tenfold. Some new senses even had been added to what I already had. My perceptive eyes had become so widened that I was noticing things that I normally didn't notice. The complexity of the opening, the complexity of the experience after the exiting from this light hole was such that all I did was just go sit next to a tree and just close my eyes. This light hole experience added a very powerful dimension to the tree experience and to the intimacy with the green lady that preceded it. I realized that somehow there are worlds that are linked to the one we have here that are very important for us to be aware of or for us to visit or something. But at least these worlds are there to help us widen our horizons of perception and to increase our senses. This is the only way, at least, that I came to understand that we can dance with the kind of spirit that has been following us since birth and would like to be completely a part of the life mission that, at least from a village point of view, each one of us comes equipped with. These two experiences, again, for me, were a major breakthrough in producing the kind of transformation that actually I tumbled my way to the village looking for. But it was not all, because I forgot to say it in the beginning of this tape, but initiation is a 6-week experience, in the course of which most of the things that happen are of this type of brand. Of course, more than half of those events cannot be talked about. And there are some that I can't even think about talking about. And the one that I've been able to describe so far, I've been able to do so only partially. Because these are the kind of thing that you experience, not the kind of thing you encapsulate in a language, because they come equipped with their own language, as I said earlier. Following this kind of experience, we had another one, which consisted in jumping into a pool after the intensity of descent that the previous light hold afforded me, I was not surprised that a shallow pool becomes an endless water place. I was not surprised to find out that, yeah, we human beings can actually breathe the same way as fish breathe in the middle of water. I didn't have any problem understanding that we have very intimate connection with certain species of fish, namely what is called a dolphin. I understood later why they say that these water beings travel with a cloud and go places that are far removed from the actual physical water. I got in there with a mind that is far less restless and with a body that was eager to just get on with another exciting venture. The part that was difficult was indeed in the ritual that followed after that, because upon coming out of the pool, we were asked to prepare for a burial ceremony. Apparently, having gone almost two-thirds of the way, they assumed or thought that there has been a death that had occurred. Not the kind of death that were witnessed at the light hole, these two consecutive deaths, but the kind of death which means a shift from one state to another, leaving the old self behind and embracing the new one, the one that is aware of the subtle life forces lurking around, and the one that is aware of the constant presence of the spirit world, as if the spirit world has us under a constant eye watch. And therefore, we're supposed to bury ourselves. That was an experience which was painful for me. Because what happened was that, you know, I had the choice between digging a grave that is horizontal or vertical, so that if you choose to dig it horizontal, you will lay down in it and they will put the dirt on top of you and you will stay there overnight. Or if you choose vertical, then you will stand up and the earth will be put around you the same way. For me, at least, the entire experience was a nightmare, because the amount of the earth on your body heating up your whole body and drawing sweat after sweat has the power to lead you into some serious hallucinatory experiences. But strangely enough, I didn't get to go to a place that made me hate the experience itself. Somehow, it felt to me as if the sum total of the previous experiences were participating in my ability to withstand the long 8 hours of burial that each one of us experienced in the course of two consecutive nights. One person was supposed to attend another person who was buried overnight, and the next night was supposed to shift. I want to talk about the culmination of the initiatory experience itself, which I refer to as the voyage to the underworld. Because for me, again, it's a culmination which, of course, was an opportunity for me to visit physically and consciously and with my intellect a world that looks like this one, except that it is greener, more beautiful, more harmonic, and to be able to come back again to this world of the human being with something that I can hang on to as a gift from that world, which is being approached by the elder as my first medicine. It started one afternoon when we're being told that we're supposed to each go to an assigned place at a high elevation where there were an excavation, some kind of cave, that we're supposed to enter these caves and walk our way into whatever world showed up to us at that place, and to be able to return with whatever we had found there, and to deliver that thing for the council of the initiation to do the rest of the work that they were supposed to do for us. So when the night came, of course, I ended up with a few more adolescent initiates to make the journey, which was more like about walking 10 miles to the mountains and finding my way to the cave that was assigned to me and taking up with the rest. When I arrived there, of course, it was like midnight. I could tell the presence of the cave because of the extra darkness in that area. I had some light with me, and so I knew that that light, because it was not going to be needed eventually, was enough to get me to the doorway, and then I could, from then on, follow whatever was supposed to be seen there. When I entered it, it was all dark. At first, I walked a little bit, then found out that the cave was getting narrower and narrower, so I had to bend down, and soon I had to come down to my knees, and soon I had to be completely flat on the ground, crawling. What I saw upon being flat on the floor was a source of light that to me appeared more like the sky on the other side of the cave, which I took for being actually the sky of the night, which told me somehow that actually it was the other end of the hill that carried the cave. So for me, I started to crawl towards that place. And the closer I was getting to it, the bigger it was growing. It was some kind of dawn-like sky that was half bright, half dark, but was nothing that would illumine the path that I was on. And so it became for me like a focal point. And because of the difficulty I was experiencing crawling towards that light place, I couldn't move faster. But when I got there, I noticed indeed that yes, it was an exit, but it was not an exit into this world, but it was an exit into another world. How I noticed it was first the realization that I had become very loud to myself. I heard my mind probing the new space that I had entered as if I was inside a huge loudspeaker blasting at me. So I tried to stop thinking. I noticed that the simple thought of stopping to think was a painful thing because of the fact that it felt as if I was screaming at myself. Soon I realized that there was blood coming out of my ears because my eardrum couldn't stand the amount of noise that I was making to myself. I don't know, nor do I remember, what made my mind shut up. But eventually, that happened. And all of a sudden, I found myself quieter and quieter and quieter. And that's when I heard from the depth of my heart a voice order me to walk down the hill I was at. What happened is that, again, something of a mental type hit my consciousness, asking me to look behind for the exit that I had reached in order to locate its whereabout so that when I would be returning, I would know where to go. When I turned around, what I was seeing in front of me was duplicated right behind me, everything but a hole that I had exited from. It was amazing. Because the moment I noticed that the hole had disappeared, my mind came back again, and the pain resumed again. Fortunately, the whole thing quieted down, and I found myself obeying the order to go down the hill. Looking in front of me, the scene was very beautiful. Trees, animals of any kind of imaginable type, grazing, and there was a river, maybe a mile, maybe two, right in front of me, I could tell because of the way nature looks when there is a river around that area. And I realized that this was the direction I was going. It wasn't long before I reached the edge of the river. Its black water was moving very slowly in a current that sounded like it was slow, but actually was pretty potent because it appeared to me that it must be a very deep river. I looked at the sky, and the sky was very blue, pretty much like the sky in our Earth world on a beautiful day that has no sun. Because I could not tell the source of the firmament. I couldn't tell where the sun was, or whether the sun was going to rise or not. As I stood there looking at the sky, I heard the voice tell me to walk into the water and to cross. By that time, I didn't have any strength to resist anything. Later on, I thought about it and I said, well, I knew that the river was very deep. I knew the current was strong enough. I was not a very good swimmer. My mind would have resisted. My mind would have argued, but I didn't argue. I put my feet into the water and noticed that I was walking on something hard, relatively slippery, but my bare feet could grip on, and therefore I had water just barely beyond my ankle. As I walked that way across the river, which was something like 20 feet, I noticed as I was about to get to the other side, looking down on my feet, that my left foot was standing between two eyes. I noticed that it was the eyes of a crocodile. Strangely enough, I wasn't scared. I just crossed. Of course, later on I found out that this is the reason why our family totem is a crocodile. When I crossed the river, I was asked to turn right and to walk along the river, which I did. And I don't know how long a distance I walked. It was a long time. I would say 5 miles, 10 miles. It was a very exhausting one. Until I reached a place where the trees were rather sparse, and there was a little bush in the middle of which there was something shiny. I found myself being moved to get in there. When I got in, I was moved to take that stone. I noticed it was a shiny stone that looked like a water stone, but was like a star. I grabbed it, and as soon as I put it on the palm of my hand, it stuck to my hand. It was extremely cold. Just the same cold experience that I had experienced when I jumped into that light hole. And immediately I found out that not only did it stick to my hand, but it was growing. And it kept growing and growing. And yet, I was not feeling weight associated with the growth. It was growing and becoming brighter and brighter. I can't tell exactly what happened, but ultimately I found myself like a fetus in the middle of that stone. The feeling was very strange. I got thrown back way into another lifetime when I was in some kind of weird place as a hunter. The sequences of events there are so numerous there was no way I could remember or even narrate them in any kind of order that has logic to it. But it was like all of a sudden most lives that I've lived became present to my consciousness. And yet I found myself in this kind of glass-like dome, cold, freezing, and yet going through all these different images as if I am experiencing every one of them at once. I don't remember what exactly happened, but all of that came to an end, thank God. And I realized that I was still holding that tiny little stone in my hand. It was still blinking like a breathing star, but it was no longer sticking to my hand anymore. But at the same time, I noticed something interesting happening to me. The kind of almost trance-like energy that had surrounded me since that bad hearing experience at the exit of the cave had somewhat dissipated. In other words, I was no longer being guided by this inner energy that was ordering me to go here or there, to cross the river, and so on and so forth. I found myself, for lack of a word, normal, with the ability to inquire, because immediately I felt like, gee, I need to get out of here. I need to go back. But then my consciousness started saying, where is the exit? Where am I going to go? And it was at that time that I noticed a little girl, say maybe 9 or 10 years old, carrying a clay pot, which presumably was full of water, because her naked body was constantly being soaked by the water pouring out of the clay pot, and so she was quite soaked by that water. So I assumed, as is the custom in the village, that she had been somewhere to a source, a spring, to fetch water and was taking that home. Strangely enough, all I asked her was, how do I get out of here? And she stopped and looked at me and pointed to some mountains that were quite far away and said, do you see those mountains? And I realized there were three of them. And she said, pick the one in the middle. Go to the other side of it. There is another door there. Just walk in there. And then she started walking away. And strangely enough, I became eager to get to those mountains as quickly as possible. It was not difficult to find that cave over there. And as soon as I entered it, it became darker and darker and darker until I had to crawl. But I didn't crawl very long because I realized that the cave all of a sudden has become like a huge living room. And so I just walked perfectly standing up and realized that, yes, I was at the exit. Here's the sky. It was still dark. It was still nighttime. But I could tell by the look of the east that dawn was at hand. So I walked down the hill, but then soon realized that no, this is not the same cave that I entered in. This is a different cave. How do I orient myself back to where the camp is? I looked on the sky for the guiding star. The North Pole star is called in my tribe a guiding star. And when I noticed it, that's when I was able to tell where the camp is. Where I had exited was about 15 miles from where I had entered. By the time I reached the Elder's Circle, the sky had completely become clear, except that the sun had not started to come out yet. One of the elders beckoned me to come to him and to give him my stone. He looked at it and nodded, passed it around, and every elder nodded at it and then gave it back to him. After that, he asked me to come to the side with him. I went there. I was, by that time, feeling extremely exhausted because the whole experience had taken the whole night and I hadn't slept at all. He sat in front of me and told me at first that he's very happy that I had survived this big experience. Of course, at first I didn't think any thought. But he was speaking in a very unusual manner. And then the thing that tipped me was when he said that he was asked to be my special protector in the course of this whole experience in order to make sure that it takes me to the place I am at right now. Somehow what was said or what I heard tipped me because it sounded familiar. But I looked at the elder. I couldn't recognize him. He asked me to look more intensely. I looked intensely, but it didn't change. You know, just it was getting to be like the tree experience. And then, in the end, he just said, "Come on, you don't recognize Giso? I'm your mentor. The one who has been behind you when you arrive in the village and has been doing all this ceremony with you. I've been with you all this time, you couldn't even recognize me." That's when I looked carefully and I noticed that, yeah, that's him. And how come that for 6 weeks he had been coming and going without my noticing anything? He said it had to be that way. Because if I had for any reason suspected that he was there among the council of initiation, my initiation wouldn't have worked. That day, we were all sent out to get ready because the following day we were supposed to walk back to the village. Not much happened. From the time all of us came back from the cave and from the other world to the time when we were all brought up to the village outskirt, the same place that we were brought to and stripped from our clothes and handed over to the bush and to the council of initiation. The strange thing at that moment was that the entire village was there. And for me, it felt like, yes, this is the kind of return that I wanted to have. Because the feeling was very, very intense. I saw my father, my sister, and my 4 other brothers, and the sense of belonging, which I had not felt prior to the initiation, hit my consciousness. I knew that I was a member of this village, that finally I had arrived home. They walked me home, of course, and for the first time in 6 weeks, I took the ritual bath. Then we walked into the room. And there, again, was the other ceremony consisting of putting on the traditional garb. It was the first time that I was ordered to put on the kind of outfit that has become, for me, my working outfit, the traditional indigenous boo-boo, as they call it. Then the whole family accompanied me to the village circle, where the other initiates gathered there for the homecoming dance. When that happened, we all went back home. And for me, that was the first time I ever had the kind of night's sleep since my grandfather died and since my departure from the village. That was the first time I had a night's sleep that was peaceful. And so I live to remember that because it took this kind of return in order to complete the kind of being that was in formation within myself so that I can embrace the kind of mission that my life was about, to make friends with a stranger enemy. This is what I would like to say in conclusion. First of all, without initiation, I wouldn't be living the kind of life that I'm living today. What initiation did to me was to counteract the amount of education and transformation that I had received in the hands of white people. The worldview that I returned home with after 15 years in the seminary was tremendously trimmed down to the point where it was no longer the basis for my life, but an inkling into a kind of world that I finally understood that I was going to be dealing with later on. But the distinguishing thing that I noticed in myself was the sudden, almost total disappearance of this angry emotion that I had carried with me to the village when I broke away from the seminary and I went home. I did remember that the days that followed that return from the initiation camp were extremely quiet. I was one of the most peaceful person I'd ever known. And every day I found myself walking and talking as if I had been in this village all my life and that nothing had happened at all. I didn't even think about the need for forgetting how to read and write. It didn't occur to me that I even knew that or still knew that. I also had in my mind that, well, from now on, it's just going to be a matter of settling down and living happily ever after in my village, because even though somehow I had come to a certain kind of understanding of what my life was supposed to be in the future as a result of this initiation, I knew that somehow I wanted to stay in the village and live quietly and happily, at least ever after. It was not long before these same elders, in whose life I had been the center of tremendous debate, started to speak about me again. This time it was not because I was problematic, but it was because they needed to remind me of the fact that I had promised to be their voice out there. I remember that meeting in the course of which they said that I was the first person in the village who had undergone 2 initiations successfully, and that their finding prior and after that were all pointing to one thing, that in the middle of the chaos that the world is experiencing, it is important that the dogs and the cat learn to live with one another peacefully, and that the only way that that can happen is for them to have someone in me who will go out there and tell the white man about the kind of thing that he overlooked when he came to this village. I had no way of telling how I'm going to do that. And I had no way of actually realizing that I was going to do that. I thought it was just a rhetorical thing, to point out some basic things about the symbolism of my life or something of that sort. But very soon I understood that they expected me indeed to walk my talk. And this is when I realized indeed that I had to get going. It was not a pleasant thing, because, of course, who would want to leave and join the city, the modern world, after having experienced what I experienced? Maybe I was caught up by some kind of heroic move. Whatever it is, I found myself in the city at the beginning of this story. But I know that the path that I had followed till now has opened up to me tremendous, tremendous amount of things. All of those things have meant the constant presence of the spirit of my grandfather in my life, inspiring me with the kind of words, with the kind of images, and with the kind of ritual and symbolism that would keep me along the path that I said I was here to walk. I believe that any person who is interested in his or her path must also be interested in his or her past. These two things go together, because the ancestors see the road ahead and are more than willing to show us that path. It is up to us to surrender to it in order to be able to fulfill the life purpose assigned to us. Initiation helped me indeed understand not only the difficulty of trying to be in 2 worlds, but also the joys involved in it, the healing that is involved in it. Today we're dealing with fast changes, the kind of changes that are not to the best of the world as it is. In the middle of that, people are waking up to the great forces of spirit, to the great connection with other world. And I believe that these people are also going through an initiation. People should not want to have the kind of initiation that I just talked about because it is the model. Remember, when I first arrived in the village, the mention of initiation and association with me was a very controversial issue. It means, therefore, that initiation is something that means the departure of one type of person in us and the replacement of that type of person with a different one, so that it results in a greater clarity and understanding of the reason why we are in this world. And therefore, I'm not telling my own story or my own initiation so that people can go in search of that type of initiation. I'm telling it so that people can understand that the kind of subtle voices they hear within themselves, the dream that brings them all these strange images, that some encounters that may have had in nature, in their walks, in their sleep, may not be the product of their own imagination, but may be connected to some very concrete and solid reality having a lot to do with them. And all I'm saying is that the Dogara people deal with magic because that is the kind of reality that shed tremendous light into the nature of life in this side of the reality. And maybe those people who are experiencing the magic every day are probably being asked to use that magic to shed some light in their day-to-day life. And one more thing I'd like to say. Just as magic is connected somehow with something painful, people must understand that the painful challenges that they face every day are perhaps the kind of clue that they must look at in association with initiation. In other words, it may mean that perhaps this is what their own initiation is. And by knowing that, develop a form of submission to it that can not only accelerate it, but bring them closer to themselves and to the kind of home that this kind of initiation meant. Remember, the great part of my initiation was not just those magical experiences that I experienced. It was the kind of feeling that I had when I returned to the village and found a whole village welcoming me back. And I think that a lot of us who are going through initiation are doing so because they're looking for a village to return to and to be welcomed in it so that they can begin to deliver the goodies that initiation had unveiled in their psyche. And by doing that, also appreciate the appreciation that is coming to them from the people they are sharing their day-to-day life with. I think that it is not just a maledoma, that is to say, me having to deal with the business of making friends. It is all of us who are in any kind of spiritual path who are facing the challenge of making friends with challenges, or should I call it the enemy. The state of the world today is throwing us, all of us, into a massive initiatory experience. We need to hold hands with one another if we do want that initiation to lead us to a homecoming where we can embrace one another and join in a circle of true villages, true communities, and true people dealing with true spirit.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.